Michael Bloomberg on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Now, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
All right, 8 minutes now after 8 o'clock here on the John Gambling Show. It is a Friday. Mayor Michael Bloomberg is here. Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning. Unfortunately, I'm only here till about 8:30.
Yes, I heard.
Well, I'm going to go and speak at the New York City Partnership, which is this organization of businesses that have been very helpful in trying to assist us in getting monies out of Washington for Sandy relief. They have a meeting every day, week, month, whatever, and need a speaker. And I said, well, if you do this, I'll do that.
Okay, yeah,
I didn't
exactly.
actually say that. The staff says this.
I understand.
To put it together.
It was a smart
move. And it's a good organization. It really does help New York City. They do a lot of things. Ken Chenault and Terry Lundgren. Chenault runs American Express. Lundgren runs Macy's, Bloomingdale's. They're the co-chairs. And there's, you know, all of the people that run these big businesses are there, and it's a great group for the city. They really are very helpful, and you know, they have a lot of say in Washington. People in Washington respect them, go to them for campaign donations and that sort of stuff. So it's a nice thing to say.
Now, there's a full court press on this from all elements concerned about this money out of Washington. Do you read anything into the longer it takes, the less it'll be?
I don't know what's going to happen. We gave our numbers of what we think is fair, not what we want. This is not a trough you can just feed at. We're citizens of America, and we should only ask for things that are legit, where the government normally would step in. We gave our numbers to Governor Cuomo. He included them in his. He and Governor Christie got together. They came up with a number, an ask of, I think it was something like $80 billion. The president, with Sean Donovan's approval, I guess, or assistance, or did the numbers for him, sent a request to Congress for $60 billion. And now what is likely to happen is they will come back with less. You go, you ask for something, some yes, some no. You know, some people say, give it to me right away. Well, you know, if they did that, I'm not so sure we as Americans should be happy. You'd think they would want to ask questions before they give away the public's money. You'd think they'd want to try to put it in context of lots of needs when we don't have money for everything we want to do. I happen to think this is a very good project,
certainly,
and a good thing that they should, but to just give it without asking us to justify it and show, put some checks and balances in so they know the money's spent wisely, would not be good government. And I think that there's a process. One of the newspapers was screaming, now this is an outrage. In Washington, they've got the fiscal cliff, which I describe as the fiscal incline, since nothing dramatic would happen on January 1st if they didn't come to an agreement. This is just made for
television. They like those pictures, though.
Yeah, I know. It's great theater for the media. But the truth of the matter is they could rewrite the code a year from now and retrospectively the tax code, and they could, things they cut aren't going to get cut overnight. They could cut over a long period of time. But regardless, my style is to go and to work with each of them, talk to every single congressman and senator that is on the committees that are involved, and try to explain to them what happened here, where we stand, why this money would be money well spent, why if they help New York, it will help the country, why it's fair if they helped others, they should help us, lessons we've learned from other places. I had spent some time yesterday with the mayor of New Orleans, Mitch Landau, who's a really good guy, and listening to how his experience was and what worked and what didn't work. And
don't you think there's some leftover memories in Washington about Katrina and the monies that were sort of poured there?
Almost every person I talked to in Washington mentioned that. Not every, but almost everyone. Some said, you know, we should have done this, we should have done that. Hindsight is always interesting.
Easy. Yeah. Yeah,
easy. But the bottom line is, remember, when Katrina happened, the economy was booming. Today, it's very different in Washington, so it's not, it's certainly understandable or not unlike, it's understandable that they would ask different questions and take a little more time, and you know, I think we can make a good case, and I'm optimistic. You're not going to get everything you ask for, but we should get a lot. And whatever we get, number one, you got to say thank you, because we're going to need something down the road again.
Isn't there
a number two, we got to find ways to do more with less.
Isn't there a danger as well of sort of everybody looking at this as opportunity, from whether it's the broad picture or a narrow picture, and that it's going to get dangerous, that it pollutes sort of the whole event?
Well, there's a good example the other day with food stamps. We've been working around the clock to support those who were hit hardest by Sandy. And part of that was in areas hardest hit, and only in areas hardest hit, we raised the income level to qualify for food stamps. Not by a lot, but by some. That will help them. And it's, you know, listen, we should come to the aid of people when they're really hurting. But we have an obligation as Americans to use the resources where they're justified and be good stewards of the taxpayers' money, and particularly when we're asking Congress to authorize a massive expenditure to help us with recovery. And some people, some of the congressmen are screaming, you got to do for everybody, you got to do for everybody. And you know,
it was kind of like the free lunch program that they
put
through.
Well, yeah, but even if, whether you, I happen to agree with that, but let's assume you don't. Let's assume you think everybody should have more. It isn't the right time to do that when we're in, it just isn't helpful. And, you know, well, they should do that. You know, should have, would have, and could have. I don't know. I mean, we should be acting as adults and treating Congress as adults. And I think that's the way you get the most.
I couldn't agree with you more. We do have limited time here today, so I'm going to take a break right here, and then we're going to come back. I got a long list of questions for Mayor Michael Bloomberg here on the Friday get together here, 19 minutes after 8 o'clock. A couple of things. The cab of tomorrow, John Liu in the paper this morning says he wants to kill it.
I have no idea why. And it isn't worth spending a lot of time trying to decipher why some of these things are done. I'm not here to assassinate anybody, but it doesn't make a lot of sense. In fact, it doesn't matter. We can go ahead and do it anyways, which we will.
Okay. The apps have been approved by the Taxi and Limousine Commission.
Yeah, one-year
trial. Taxi apps.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of different ways to use your cell phone to call a cab, to pay for the cab, to do this, do that. There's lots of different companies writing these apps. Everyone's different. I have absolutely no idea which one is better. My sense has always been you should have more than one so the public has a choice and let the marketplace decide. But we did change the rules. So for a one-year trial period, starting in February, you can use these apps. And, you know, there are all sorts of combinations, but the mobile phone knows where you are. So in theory, you hit a button and any taxi driver that's on the same app and his mobile phone or her mobile phone can hit a button and say, I'm going to come. Now, what happens if two guys hit the button at the same time? What happens if you hit the button, the guy says he's coming, and in the meantime, some cab pulls up empty, somebody's getting out, do you hop in, and what do you do with the first guy, and whose obligations are what? Those are details, and each one's different, and my attitude is let the marketplace pick.
My guess is the cab companies or the cabbies would like this.
There is a group of cab owners that are opposed to anything. But most cab drivers should like this. They didn't like credit card use, and now they'll all tell you their tips are up dramatically.
Well, that's because it comes right on the screen,
right.
and people are lazy. They push the whatever
sure,
one they want.
Sure, and also, if it's not real money when you're adding it to your bill. It's real money when you have cash. The cab industry is a funny industry. I don't know of any other place in the world where the city gives a license and the people that have that license can then trade it and resell it, and the city doesn't have any interest and any ability to share in the value going up. And the politics, because they support candidates, a normal market, you'd say, well, just issue more taxi licenses. Wrong, because they have bought the legislatures and stop them the ability to do that. It is one of the great rip-offs of the public any place I've ever seen.
Yeah, the pedicabs. I spoke this morning with Laramie Flick.
Laramie Flick.
He is the president of the New York City Pedicab Owners Association.
Oh, he might have been one of those that testified.
I'm sure he probably was. And it was very interesting because we all hear about pedicabs, but I don't think we know very much about it, how much they cost to run and all of the things that go with it. Be that as it may, he was telling me that this new law that you signed yesterday on the yep. charges, half of the pedicab riders like it or drivers like it, and the other half don't like it.
Number one, there's a lot of people, and there's been a lot of press against pedicabs for reasons I don't understand. If the public wants them, let the public have them. How many? Let the marketplace decide. Government shouldn't be in the business of limiting people's choice. This is like limiting what stores are can open in New York City and sell goods and services and employ our people. This is just these are places go or whether or not the social views of the owner should dictate whether or not you can have a store here. These are things that it just an out government should not be anywhere near this. And I think if they got litigated, the courts in most cases would stop. Not in all, but most cases would stop it. In this case. The bill had to do with posting how much the charge can be, and there's nothing wrong with having posted rates. You can make the case that every individual cab owner or pedicab owner should be able to negotiate with their driver. That's not a practical way to do it. We don't want that for our tourism. You have to set a rate where people can make a living, and if you set the rate high enough, there'll be a lot of pedicabs. You set the rate low enough, there won't be enough, and so you try to find some balance. But it's the reason I didn't say there were a number of people that came to testify at a hearing. We have a hearing after every city council bill is passed before I sign it. Sometimes I veto it. Sometimes I sign it. When I veto it, invariably the city council overrides it. But that's neither here nor there. And I listen very carefully. Everybody thinks it's a joke, but I don't think it's a joke. I listen to people. And there were three or four people that made a case that the pedicab industry wasn't being treated fairly. My commissioner was there. And he wasn't prepared to answer all the questions, so I said, I'm not going to sign this bill until I find out more about the industry. Afterwards, I asked him to look into it. He talked to everybody. I got the results of what he had learned and decided we should sign the bill, and then I signed it.
Okay. Temperature of the teacher evaluation discussions with the UFT. There's a deadline that Dennis Walcott has put in of next Friday, week from today. What do you think?
Well, the deadline is that we have to start working on our January budget modification. The law says we have to modify our budget in November and January. I think maybe there's an April one, but regardless, and before the final budget is negotiated with the city council, approved by the city council, signed by the mayor. We've got to get ready. What the contingency? What if you don't come to an agreement? Governor Cuomo has said he'd withhold $230 something like that $1 million from the city's education department. And so if it does not look like we're going to get there, I'll have to start getting ready because we're going to have to spread that loss over all city agencies. You can't just take it out of education. You know, all the money's fungible. And in the end, we take the whole amount of money we look at the needs of everything and back into a number, and then you see what you can get out of the taxpayer, the city council, whatever. And then you go back and so an iterative process with each agency making arguments as to why their agency should get more. And that process would start on, I think we said December 21st. Will we come to an agreement? I don't know. I can tell you if it is not a real agreement that locks in real evaluations where the public can tell whether or not their kids are getting a good education, we're just not going to sign it. This country is falling behind the needs of industry and falling behind our competitors around the world in educational achievements. New York City spends more money than any other place, probably. Massachusetts may be close, but other than that. And we don't have anywhere near the results. Florida, and Massachusetts in one case, in all fairness, We're the only two states where their statewide tests showed kids doing better than what the kids are doing in Asia and other places where they had a scandal.
Florida.
Jeb Bush was governor of Florida.
I'm very surprised at that, pleasantly.
Jeb Bush is one of the great heroes of public education. And in all fairness, when he finished his term, his successors have carried on, which is why they keep going it. And Jeb Bush spends most of his time going around this country working on public education.
Florida's educational system in the past was not good.
Florida is, it is quite remarkable. This is a guy who, Jeb Bush, deserves an enormous amount of credit. I don't agree with him on a lot of things. Not very conservative. He's more conservative than I am on a lot of things. But boy, when it comes to education, he's the hero. And I think if you asked Ernie Duncan.
His changes applicable anywhere?
Yeah, I mean, Florida's a big state, so
it
if
is.
They can do it there,
right.
We can do it. And one of the real things is to reward those teachers who do a good job and try to help those teachers that can't. But if they still can't after the help, not have them in front of our students. Plain and simple. I mean, the people say, I want better schools, but I don't want anybody to get hurt. You can't have it both ways. In your job, if you don't do a good job, you're not going to be here.
Done.
Same thing in mine. And it's more important that the teachers don't do that. Because, you know, you and I come and go, and who gets hurt? I get hurt. But the kids, they get hurt and if they aren't, if they can't make a good living and participate in the great American dream, their kids and their grandchildren are going to, it goes on and on and on. My hope is that with the teachers union, Michael Mulgrew, that we come to an agreement and, you know, but you asked about the December 21st deadline. That's in case it doesn't look like it. I'll have to make a decision then.
They pledged, the union, UFT, pledged $1 billion to infrastructure. Do you think that is a chip on the table
well, I think
in this negotiation?
Does it curry favor with anybody? Maybe it sounds good. And they're doing it with Bill Clinton and the Clinton Global Initiative. I have not looked at it yet. It's pension funds have to be run to maximize the return for the pensioners. And in the case of pension funds where the returns are really guaranteed by law, it's really the taxpayers that have to make sure the returns are high. Our pension funds in New York City and New York State are basically, they would outlive bankruptcy. They're always going to be the money there, no matter what happens to the size of the pension fund. So the people with a stake here are not the unions. It is the taxpayer. And I think the taxpayers want to have the return maximized. And if the taxpayers also want to put money into infrastructure like they're doing, you should really do that separately. And I happen to think we should do it, incidentally. But confusing the two, no rational business would run that way.
MTA fares, bridges and tunnel fares going up.
I haven't looked at whether it's the right amount.
It's got to be regressive, though, to a degree, right?
I keep coming back to this. I have a great idea. Let's tax the bridges and give the money to the MTA. You'll have fewer cars and more passengers and
more money.
Fine. Nobody wanted to do that. So what do you think's going to happen? And this is going to get worse and worse and worse. We had an idea. Everybody in the end signed on to it except Albany. They said they have a better idea. Call Albany. Next time you get the governor or the legislature or the legislative leaders here, ask them to come up with something. New York City did its part.
All right, you might not have to show up here next Friday because the world is supposed to end according to the Mayan calendar. Do you have any concerns?
Yeah, I better make sure my socks are folded. And there's that one meal that is not good for my waistline.
Yes, but the one you're going to have Friday, Thursday night.
The trouble is, if you know it's going to end, you're not going to be hungry.
Yeah, you'll be too upset. Right.
Right.
Mr. Mayor, you've got a business meeting to get to. Thank you, as always.
See you next week.
We'll see. I hope.
I hope.
I hope as well. All right, 8:31 here on the John Gambling Show.